This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. Helping salespeople reach their fullest capabilities involves training and maximizing their skills. But it goes far beyond that. It requires coaching that challenges them to think differently, to think bigger, and to know that they haven't reached their fullest potential. Being a great salesperson is about relationships, but not just with customers. It's also with colleagues and leaders. A successful career in sales is also about simply being happy. Alan Allard is an expert in human performance and happiness. He's a former salesperson himself, first with Metropolitan Life Insurance and later with Motorola. And as he has said, he was coaching before coaching even became a profession. Alan brings insights into human performance, behavior change, and what it takes to truly be happy at work and in life. Alan, thank you so much today for being with us on Mental Selling.
Will, it's very good to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
I've been excited about having you as a guest on this for a long time. We were talking before we started recording about how I've been following and sharing a lot of your content for several years because it really syncs very well with what we talk about on this podcast around the mental and emotional and behavior sides of selling. But let's start with this. Why are happiness and fulfillment aspects of work something that salespeople and the companies that they represent should be paying more attention to?
Yeah, that seems like such a easy question to answer, but we've made it complicated. If I were to ask, is being happy in a marriage or a partnership with someone for life, is that important? What about being happy with our relationship with our kids or our friends? So what is it about work that somehow we think happiness, that'd be nice to have, but it's not really that big of a deal. It doesn't hurt our performance or our quality of life. That just doesn't make any sense. What am I supposed to spend a third of my life doing something that I'm not excited to wake up to?
We're spending more than 2,000 hours a year doing this. So we've got to get some fulfillment out of it. But I think people don't, they might nod at the idea, but they don't know what to do about it. And I think, as you've said, I saw you write something where you said people get used to a life of being okay. And that somewhere along the line, they give up on the idea of what things could be, right?
Yeah, that's the norm, right? Is we settle for being less than who we really are. We settle for less than what we want and what we're capable of. And a lot of that is because we're simply in an environment that makes it easy to do that. But when it comes to work, work is such an important piece of our life. It should be interesting. It should be challenging in the sweet spot. It should be something that brings the best out of ourselves. It really should be something that we wake up to and say, well, I can't believe I get to do this. I don't ever plan to retire. I can't imagine not doing what I am doing. That's how work should be.
Yeah, one of my colleagues, he talks about how one of the aspects that makes a salesperson successful is the view that they have of the job, that it is a get-to job, not a have-to job. And that people that view it that way are inherently going to be that much more driven, motivated, and ultimately successful, right?
Yeah. One thing in sales that's very, very clear is that one of the key factors in someone's ability to be successful, as well as happy, is the right fit, as you well know. I've worked with many salespeople that just weren't in a job that was the right fit for them, and they were doing okay, but then when they found the right fit, they just took off like a rocket and loved every right. minute of it. So we have to have the right fit. And when there's the right fit, just like with a relationship or, you know, some people like to go to the beach, some people like to go to the mountains. So there's a right fit for how we spend our time, right?
Yeah, that cultural fit is such an important aspect of what salespeople should be thinking about and taking a job. It's not necessarily, oh, I'm going to go work for the market leader in X or Y or Z. Ultimately, that matters a lot less than if they really are a cultural fit.
Yeah, exactly. So our happiness, and by the way, I define happiness as just any form of positive emotional energy. Mm-hmm. So it could be a sense of fulfillment, a sense of meaning, a sense of curiosity, yeah. a sense of flow. That's critical. We're never going to perform at the level that we could if we're not experiencing those positive emotional energies on a consistent basis. If we're trying to say, oh, I need to do this, I have to do this, then we'll get some version of ourselves, but we won't get ourselves.
Yeah. One of the things that stood out to me about your writing when I first came across you online years ago was this fundamental belief that you share with us, I think, at Integrity Solutions, that selling is far more about what salespeople believe, their motivations, and the behaviors that they adopt more than just the quote-unquote sales skills. What is your perspective there today in sort of the, you know, the post-COVID landscape? And what does mastering the mental game of selling mean to you?
I think the mental game of selling starts with who I think that I am, my identity, and how I view myself and how I feel about myself. One reason why salespeople have trouble prospecting, you know, they say it's about rejection, but what's really going on is their fear of rejecting themselves. In other words, if they call someone and they feel like they get that person's rejection, that's only a problem because then they go inside and it matches up with how they see themselves already, how they feel about themselves. And so now they're criticizing themselves or rejecting themselves. So that's a problem. If we view sales as offering someone an incredible opportunity to improve their life in some way, then we see it as a very noble profession. We are there to dramatically impact someone's life for the better. What could be better than that? So if a salesperson views himself or herself that way, then they're going to interact on a completely different level. They're going to interact as a peer. They're going to interact as, I am here for you, and you're going to be better off when I leave, rather than going saying, hey, I need something from you.
Yeah, and your prospects, they will pick up on that one way or the other, right? Whether you're coming across with that sort of deep belief, that deep passion, or conversely, if you're going through the motions and checking boxes on step one, step two sort of thing, they're going to figure it out. And that's where you either have authenticity as a salesperson or you don't. Because like you're alluding to, the salespeople that really have that attitude of, I'm here to improve the customer's life, they're just naturally going to develop that trust and rapport and relationship so much better and faster.
Yeah. If I'm absolutely confident that what I have is going to leave you better off for having known me and worked with me, then I would have no hesitation in bringing it to your attention. But I also would have no attention in finding out if there's not a good fit. If you don't want what I have and you don't need what I have, then why would I want to try to talk you into that? That would be ridiculous.
Yeah. To build on what you brought up around prospecting, if somebody's not doing activities like prospecting consistently, right, it's not a how-to issue. Typically, it's a want-to or a why issue. So what does it actually take to change, from your perspective, to actually change a salesperson's behaviors? If a salesperson knows what to do, why then do some of those essential things like prospecting as the common example, or maybe asking customers for referrals consistently, why does it not happen? And how do you start moving the needle for them on that?
Right. Well, let's talk about the environment first. Okay. When someone is struggling, when someone is not performing at a high level, I look in three areas. Number one, what are their beliefs surrounding what they say that they want to be doing that they're not doing? They're lacking some perspective, some viewpoint, some system of beliefs that would bring them to what we call emotional readiness. And until we're emotionally ready to act on something, we're not going to act. It's as simple as that. You know, what is this person's beliefs around that? But then it's the skill level. Are they lacking in some skills? And as you said, most salespeople have been trained, right, in what language to use, maybe how to respond to certain things that the prospect says. So generally, that's not the biggest missing link. But the third piece is support. What kind of support is missing? What kind of support do they not have in their environment? So when it comes to prospecting, first of all, it's a leadership problem. Prospecting is not embedded in the culture. And culture is simply a set of beliefs and a set of behaviors. So the salespeople that aren't prospecting are almost always in an environment that the sales leaders have probably unintentionally created where you don't really have to prospect.
They're sort of removing, or maybe not removing, but not instilling that sense of self-reliance.
Well, there's no real expectation and accountability. There are no consequences positively for the people who do prospect, other than they get more sales, and there's no consequences for the ones that do not prospect. Mm-hmm. I mean, where are the managers that are saying, hey, you're having some troubles prospecting, let's meet once a week together, let's meet three times a week together, let's meet daily together, and let me help you with this? In other words, it's not important enough for the manager to do that. So the salesperson gets the message, I can get by without prospecting, see? And so they do. So that's the external. The internal is salespeople hate it because they feel rejected. So that's a self-worth problem, a self-esteem problem, a self-concept problem. And that is more challenging to address, but it can be addressed. Salespeople have to be unattached to the results that they get in any given time period. They have to be unattached to needing the approval and the acceptance of the person that they're reaching out to. And they have to believe on a very fiercely deep level, I'm not the one that's really going to suffer if we don't work together. You may not know it, but you're the one that's going to suffer, not me. I'm here to offer this to you, and it's going to change your life for the better. And they have to believe that thoroughly. So how that salesperson feels about themselves as they're prospecting is everything.
Related to this is an idea that you've written and talked a lot about, which is, why do you think salespeople don't perform to the level of their potential? You've written a lot about people, how probably almost none of us reach our quote unquote fullest potential. But for salespeople to reach more of what they are actually capable of, what parts of that, again, are their own responsibility, and which are the responsibility of their managers? And how do you hold up a mirror to a salesperson to get them to really understand how much they're truly capable of?
Yeah. I think we have to come back to the question that each salesperson needs help in answering over a period of time, and that is, what do you want? Not what is your quota, not what does the management expect of you, but what do you personally want out of this opportunity with this job, with this company? And that has got to be really thoroughly processed and some honest answers to come up with. Every salesperson should set their own quota that's irrelevant of what their company sets. So if in terms of the question of why salespeople don't do better, it's the same reason as why any human being doesn't do better. And that comes back to these three areas: our beliefs, our skill sets, or the support that we have or do not have. Something is going to be lacking in one of those three areas if we need to do better. And with salespeople, we give them a lot of skills training. What we don't give them is the mental training that your company focuses on. And that is, how do I think about myself? How do I think about what I do? And how do I think about the opportunities in a way that I am comfortable, I'm confident, I'm excited, and it just is a natural function of what I do.
Yeah, and I've read something that you wrote around that where you said one of the hardest questions we can ask ourselves, this is not necessarily just specific to sales, but in life, is, what do I really want? That can be a hard thing for somebody to answer, but it's an important thing to spend time being reflective about.
Yeah. My oldest daughter is a nurse practitioner, and she works at the intensive care unit of a major children's hospital in Atlanta, and she just loves what she does. That should be the way it is. No one has to talk her into going to work, and she works 12-hour shifts, but she absolutely loves it. And she deals with life and death. She deals with a lot of pain. She deals with a lot of complex situations. She is the person dealing with that. So that's the way sales should be, meaning we just love what we do. So what is it that I want? If I don't want to be in this company, if I don't want to be doing this, then usually people need help in getting really clear on what they want to do. We don't have to make ourselves do what we want to do. If someone's making themselves do something, they're in the wrong place doing the wrong thing. They may have to do it a little while longer until they figure it out, but they shouldn't stop and settle until they figure out, you know, what do I get to do? As you put it.
Get to do versus have to do. Yeah. From your perspective, what are elite sales performers doing that others do not?
Let's talk about the happy ones, the ones that they probably do like what they do. They respect what they do. I think that they have found, again, the right fit for them, the right environment. Being in the wrong sales job or with the wrong sales culture is like being married to the wrong person. That's bad news. Never going to work out. So elite performers are in a place where their talent is matched to what the company needs from them and what the customers need from them. It's just the right match. They love what they're offering. They love the whole process of communicating and partnering with prospects and customers to get them to where they want to go. It's not a job to them. It's more of, I don't normally use the word calling, but I'll say that. It gives them a sense of meaning. It gives them a sense of purpose. And they think the world of themselves for what they're doing. So they're just operating on a different level. when they're talking to the CEO, they don't feel like they're subservient. They don't feel like they're less than. They feel as a peer, as Alan Weiss would call it. They feel as a peer to that CEO. They may not have the same title. They may not be making the exact same money. They might be making more money, but they feel as equals and partners, and they feel, you need me. What I have is of incredible value. That's not how most salespeople feel about what they do.
Yeah, you don't want to have that sort of sense of arrogance of, you're lucky I'm in the room, but at the same time, they've got to have that innate, you know, the customer should be glad that I'm here because I'm going to help them solve a major issue that they have.
Yeah. And I would say that they should have the attitude, you're lucky I'm in the room. I can guarantee you that a brain surgeon looking down at her patient is thinking, you are lucky to have me as your surgeon today. I understand your point, and that's true. No one wants someone narcissistic, but we need to come from the place of, yeah, you're lucky you came across me. Now, I'm pleased to be with you. I'm very happy to be with you, but yeah, you're lucky that you got me today.
Another thing that I think goes back to where you talked earlier when we started about culture and cultural fit and why that's such an important thing for salespeople to weigh. What sort of culture am I getting into? You've also written something a while back that I really liked around culture and the reason that salespeople often don't take responsibility for hitting their sales quotas. Can you talk about that a bit?
I'll tell you, the main reason why salespeople don't take responsibility for their results is because sales leaders don't take responsibility for their leadership results. That's the number one reason. Salespeople are only reflecting and modeling the behavior of the senior sales leaders above them. Sales leaders have to be able to look at their sales force and say, I am responsible for what you just created in terms of that quota. You missed the quota. That's my responsibility, because otherwise, why am I here? I'm here to lead you. So that's number one. But secondly, salespeople don't take responsibility for their quota because they don't have the self-worth to be fearlessly self-honest with themselves and say, here are the results that I've created, and do that without judging and criticizing themselves. One of the biggest mistakes that human beings make, and salespeople fall into that category, is they criticize themselves and they judge themselves, and they have not yet learned that self-criticism, meaning judgment, beating up on ourselves, is never warranted. It's never justified. And I say that because I come from the place that every person, and I'm not talking about extreme behavioral things with extreme people. I'm talking about the average person. Everyone does the best they can at any given moment, all things considered. If we look at everything that led up to a decision or a behavior, even what we call procrastination, then that person did the best they could in the environment that they're in, with the beliefs that they have, with the skills that they have, and with the support that they have. And so there is no reason to criticize. The only question is, how can I help you? And as we're talking to ourselves, how can I help myself? So a salesperson has to have an adequate sense of self-worth and self-esteem to be able to say, okay, I only did 90% of my numbers. Something is off there. And it's my responsibility to take care of that and correct that. If they can do that without feeling the least ounce of bad about themselves, then they can change anything. But that's what's required.
So we've been alluding to the importance of sales leaders and how so much stems culturally and behaviorally from people that are in the sales leadership role. So I'd love to start talking about coaching a bit. And frankly, I think you'd probably agree that in most sales organizations, it's still really poorly understood. Or at best, it's either mistaken for the more tactical management duties, or it's just given lip service of like, yeah, we should be doing more, but then they don't really. Let's talk for a bit about what coaching really gives a salesperson and some of the traits of great coaches and why it's so important to a salesperson's success.
Yeah, that's a good question, because there's no one agreed upon definition of coaching. There's hundreds of definitions of coaching. So we're going to be talking from my point of view. Coaching, first and foremost, is a relationship. If I have a manager, or if I have a sales leader that I believe has my best interests at heart, and that they respect me, and that they believe in my potential, now we have a relationship and an environment where the coaching can take place and where that person can help me to succeed. Now, you can coach someone without those qualities, without really caring about that person, perhaps, and it can work if other things are falling in place. but it's not going to work as well as, hey, does this person care about me? Do they really see my potential? And do they have my best interest at heart? If I think that person is just after me to get their numbers met, I was talking with a salesperson who makes about $1 million a year. And he says, listen, when I hit my numbers, I'm done. And I generally hit my numbers into the third quarter. I am done. I'm not doing any more for my company because I don't get anything out of it, period. Now, they're not going to fire him because he's one of their highest performers, but there's no communication where they're saying, what do you want? What do you need? What would help you to continue this process? So coaching, first of all, is a relationship, and that is sorely lacking with most companies and in most cultures. If a salesperson feels like you don't really care about me and my life, then we're starting from a deficit. Now, if we have that in place, then it's a matter of agreeing upon objectives. If I'm coaching someone, when a company asks me to coach someone, my first question to that person is, do you want to be coached? Why? I've got to make sure that they do. If I'm a sales manager, I'm not going to give someone a quota per se. I'm going to say, let's have some discussions and let's talk about what you want, what's your vision for your life and how your job and your career plays in that. And then let's come up with some metrics that will help you to get there. So that is a collaborative process, whereas in most companies, they just tell the salesperson what the quota is going to be, right? And then they let them know there's going to be some discipline if you don't meet it, and there's going to be some rewards if you don't. That's not much of a relationship. That's pretty transactional at best.
Yeah, transactional is what I was thinking of when you were talking about the person that makes $1 million a year, but phones it in the third quarter because they're just feeling like they're punching a clock, if you will.
This person really loves what they do, by the way. They're very good at it, and they love what they do. But they're also saying, why should I work even 40 hours a week if I've hit the top of my compensation and you're the one benefiting from it? You know, there's something wrong with that picture.
Like you said, in that instance and in so many others, what's clearly not happening there are the conversations and the deeper questions that need to be asked. What do you want? That sort of thing. And the listening, right? The big part of coaching is the listening. To sort of ultimately help somebody think about what they're capable of, what's possible, helping them grow and be challenged, right? Because that person who's making $1 million a year, maybe that person's capable of making $1.5 million.
And maybe they want something else that's not really related to more compensation, see? But we won't know if we don't have a relationship with them and if we don't have a conversation. So I used to be a therapist and I would work with couples and I would mainly work with individuals to help people get a better relationship, but then I would bring them together and I have to ask each one of them, what's important to you? What do you really want? But before then, you know, I have to ask, do you really want to be in this relationship? If I'm coaching someone, I'm going to want to know, do you really want to be with this company? And do you really want coaching? Because that is paramount. You can't make someone do something for very long without things breaking down. Companies don't know how to coach. They don't know what coaching is about. They think that they do, and they think that if they just do what they've always done and call it coaching, that they're coaching. You know that as much as anyone. But no, that's not coaching. Coaching is a relationship where I am going to do anything and everything that I can to help you to be everything you want to be and do everything and achieve everything and experience everything that you want. And here's the key distinction. In coaching, if I'm the coach, even if I'm the sales manager, the principle is I am here for you, not you're here for me. Most companies have it structured around you're here for me.
Because they're not coaching, they're doing the more tactical management of let's walk through your numbers for the month or the week or your pipeline and to-do lists and that sort of thing, which is something sales leaders need to be doing, but it's not coaching.
Yeah, they're managing. It's as simple as that. They're managing.
Part of it is those sales leaders are not getting coached themselves. They haven't received it, so they're not reflecting it on their own people.
Exactly. No, how could they possibly know what coaching is if they haven't been through the process? Unless they're just a natural intuitive coach, and that does happen. That's why great leaders are great leaders, is somehow that they have learned and they intuitively know. But if I were to tell sales leaders one thing about coaching, I would say, you have to understand that if you don't come at it from your manager's are there to be a coach from the standpoint of them communicating, I am here for you. How can I help you? Then don't call it coaching. Just call it managing. And then use the old command and control process. Tell people what you expect and go from there.
That's a great mindset shift of what those conversations should be.
Yeah. And when I was a therapist, I had people pay me out of their own pocket. I didn't rely on insurance companies. I had more of a different model, which is why I eventually went into coaching. But it was very clear to me, they're not there for me. I am here for them. And if I cannot help them to succeed, then I don't get paid. The problem with coaching in companies is managers know that they're going to get paid even if their sales rep or a couple of them fail, because then they'll just say they weren't committed, or, well, they just weren't coachable.
Right. Or the chalk it up to like, well, you know, there's only a certain percentage retention rate we can expect, or whatever the case may be.
Which is the sales leader's fault. They don't know how to hire.
So that actually leads to the next thing I wanted to ask, which was, let's talk a little bit about average or even underperformers and high performers in the context of what type of coaching do they need? Because everybody needs coaching, but it's going to look different for everybody. And especially if you're an average performer or a high performer, what should it look like differently? And how does a salesperson even talk about maybe what they personally need? How do they bring up what they need from coaching if they're not getting it today? Or if they realize sort of where they are performance-wise, how do they broach that subject with the leader to help talk about what they need from them to get to that higher level?
Well, I'm going to turn the tables and ask you to answer that. Your company does that. So I'm curious as how you would tell a salesperson that they're saying, hey, we don't really have a sales culture. They don't provide coaching to us. What would you say to them if you don't mind me turning the tables on you?
Yeah, I think that first of all, you've got to realize that even if you're a high performer, oftentimes companies should start with coaching their high performers. Sometimes the mistake that they make is only coaching the underachievers or the people that are quote unquote average, which is a big mistake, because part of what coaching needs to be is focusing on not only development and performance, but retention. And if retention is a big part of coaching, then shouldn't your high performers be part of it? But again, it's that idea of it should look different for everybody. Because where somebody's trying to get is an individual goal. We have somebody in the organization that has said often, no two coaching conversations should look alike because no two people on your team are alike. And I think that's one of the things that companies might get wrong is they approach coaching from sort of a cookie cutter or scripted standpoint. And it ends up being just something that they check a box on as a sales leader. Well, I've met with each of my five people this week and I asked them the same three or four questions and we moved on. So I've been doing coaching. Well, not really. You've phoned it in, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the problem is companies are wanting a formula, a coaching model. And there's nothing wrong with having something, right, maybe to start with. But you're only going to be a remedial coach if you're just using the basic questions and asking that of everyone. So if you're asking someone, what are your goals? What are the obstacles? What have you done to bring solutions to those obstacles? If those are the only questions that you're asking, a chatbot could do that, couldn't they? So now we're back to a relationship.
Yeah, I was just going to say, going back to a relationship is about, in part, being really honest about what you need in that relationship. So whether it's from the leadership standpoint or the individual sales rep, you've got to be really honest of like, here's what I need to succeed. And sometimes it's frankly saying, I'm not getting it today. And I really need this from you.
Yeah. So now we're back to the self-concept of the salesperson, right? Can they assert themselves? Do they have the self-awareness to say, this is what I want and this is what I need? And can they go to the leaders and present a case for that? So they're in sales, but again, it takes a sense of self-worth and a sense of self-esteem to go to your leaders and say, this is what I want. This is what would benefit me that I don't have yet. And this is how it would benefit you. Can we talk about that? So you have to have the ability to not only know what you want, but then to have the self-worth to say, I deserve this. This is a reasonable request. And if they're reasonable, they're going to work with me to find a way to get that and then go and ask what you want with confidence and with expectation.
If a salesperson is not getting coaching, is there such a thing as like self-coaching, or are there others that they can perhaps turn to, or do they simply need to start looking elsewhere?
The sales rep that really believes in themselves, and if they like their company and the culture and the opportunity, they're going to say, I'm going to hire my own coach. And if they understand coaching and believe in the return on coaching and they believe in themselves, then it's not going to really be a risk. They're going to understand, I'm going to get this back very quickly. So they can go out and find their own. Now, can a person learn to self-coach? Yes, absolutely. They can do that, but they're not going to learn that in 2 months or 3 months. They're going to have some understanding and some skill level with it maybe 6 months into the road, but they need to go through a coaching process. and still understand that self-coaching is only going to take you so far, because what happens in a relationship is you have synergy that you'll never have just with yourself. And as someone is talking to their coach, and as that coach is asking questions or pushing back or challenging some, then things will come out of that that will just not happen with that person just with themselves coaching. They're on the inside looking in, and the sports world knows this far better than the business world. That's why they have so many coaches, people on the outside with certain expertise that's looking at the behavior and looking at the performance and the mindset of the person, and then giving ongoing continual feedback of what they're doing well and celebrating with them and what they can tweak to enjoy it more and to do even better results wise.
Yeah, it's a good analogy, right? A lot of very successful professional athletes, they don't just have the head coach on their team or manager or whatever the sport might be. In the off season, they might have that private coach that they work with. And it's typically on sort of one or two, maybe very specific things, right?
Exactly. That's where support comes in. And people don't realize, again, see, if I'm struggling, I need to take a look at my subconscious set of beliefs about myself and about what I'm struggling with. I need to look at my skill level. Do I need to amp it up some there? But I need to look at the support. Do I need a different kind of support or different support? I encourage my clients to watch the Netflix documentary on Lady Gaga. You look at who she surrounded herself with in terms of support, all kinds of support, and she makes it clear, I cannot perform on the level I do without massive amounts of support from all different resources. I don't know what it's going to take for the business world to learn from these other areas.
And it goes back to the self-worth question, right? What are you worthy of yourself and convincing yourself of that you're either worth or not?
Exactly. We're not going to ask for what we don't think that we're worthy of asking for or receiving. Simple as that. We have to be bold, and that comes out of a sense of self-worth.
And what you just said, that goes to both selling and development and coaching, right? Like, you're not going to ask for what you don't think you're worth. You could say that in the context of the salesperson with the customer or with their relationship with their leader too.
Yeah, exactly. If I was a salesperson and my company doesn't provide coaching, which most don't, by the way, I would just go to the appropriate leader and I would say, I want coaching. This is what I mean by that. What would you need from me in order to give that to me? And I would do that with the expectancy that we're going to work something out. Because if I go in there with, well, they're probably not going to think this is a good idea, or it doesn't fit their processes, it doesn't fit into whatever, then I'm in the wrong place. Why would I want to be in a place that does not value me highly and would do anything to help me to be and to achieve what I want to achieve, since they directly result from that?
Which goes again back to the company culture question, is why would you want to be part of a culture that doesn't view you as valuable enough to be invested in and invested in consistently, not just up front with onboarding or whatever the case may be?
Yeah. One reason why I went out on my own is because as much as I loved Metropolitan and Motorola, is I realized I want to create my own environment. I want to be the ultimate one that's making the decisions and the choices of what I do and giving me what I want. So the more that we can create that within the environment that we're in, the more we're going to succeed.
The last thing I want to ask you is, what's one, I don't want to say one secret, because we've talked about a lot of things. What's one other secret to improving in sales that maybe you think most salespeople, they either discount or they just fail to consider?
I would say if I would pick one thing, which I would never do, but I will for you this time, Will, is I would say elevate your self-concept. Self-concept meaning the overall way that a person views themselves, thinks about themselves, and feels about themselves. Elevate that. If I can have a larger concept of what I'm capable of and what I am worthy of, then I'm going to get to that next level. You know, I love the saying, we can't outperform our self-image. I think Maxwell Maltz came up with that. Self-image, self-concept, we can't outperform it. So I need to get my self-concept on a higher level of consciousness, so to speak, if I want those higher level results. Get it into a level where you see yourself as capable of more, as being worthy of more, and you just become fearless in the pursuit of that. You know, the more that our self-worth, and that's just another way of saying our self-concept is elevated, there is no fear. Why would I be afraid of calling on a CEO or saying something to a CEO? I remember when I was with Motorola, I stopped in to see a client. I was selling two-way radio communication, and I was talking to the CFO, And he said, okay, well, we need this order. And I was 6 months into it. And man, it was a big order. And I was excited. And I said, okay, well, that's wonderful. Our regional VP had just told us you cannot turn in an order without getting at least 10% deposit anymore. I believed him. He said that I believed him. And so I told the CFO, I need this. He said, well, I can't get it to you right now. And I said, okay, I'll come back later today or tomorrow and get the check, and then I'll turn in the order. He said, you don't understand. It was a large construction business. We need this right away. And I said, well, I have to have at least 10%. Well, I can't give it to you. And so I got up out of the chair and I was starting to walk away. He said, where are you going? I said, I have to have the 10% check before I turn in the order. Call me at any time today or tomorrow and I'll be back. And he got angry. He said, wait a minute. He went and got the president of the company out of a meeting. The president came back, glared at me. He said, what am I doing here? Why am I being called out of this meeting? And I said, well, as I explained to your CFO, I need this check. I knew that they needed what I wanted. That was very, very clear. I had the advantage there. I wasn't trying to take advantage of them. I was trying to work within the constraints of what I'd been told. But see, there was no fear there. What was there to fear? So if a salesperson doesn't attach how they feel about themselves to getting a yes or a no, whether it's on a prospecting call or asking you for the sell, there is no fear.
And it's related to the confidence in what you're selling and what you're representing, the value of it, right? You have a real deep value in it. So you're not going to cut corners. You're not going to just discount on a knee jerk. Yeah.
Yeah. I was really proud to be with Motorola. Here I was driving around in a company car representing Motorola. That was, at least back then, I'm not sure about now, that was maybe the leading brand. So I was really feeling confident and comfortable when I walked in. It's like, well, you can go and get something from a competitor if that's what you want, but you won't have Motorola.
Yeah, that belief in the brand that you represent, it's got to be strong, because it's, again, that's one of those things that if you have that or you don't, the customer will pick up on it.
But see, that was my self-concept, right? I represent the best of the best. The highest quality possible, not only in the product, but in our customer service. You're not going to find anything better anywhere else. And you're not going to find anyone that's going to attend to you the way I'm going to attend to you. That's how I viewed myself, unapologetically. I'll never forget that experience. And then I found out the regional vice president, we had this monthly meeting and he came in to give out some small rewards and accolades. And I was the center of attention because I made the largest sell for that quarter. And when he found out what had happened, he just laughed at me. And I said, why are you laughing? And he said, we weren't telling you that you had to get 10% from an ongoing customer who's been with us for 20 years. But see, I believed it and that worked out because I had confidence in what I was doing.
Thank you for listening. And I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed. And as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.